Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you, Gordy, Janice, Doyle. Thank you, all admins. And it's truly an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak here this evening. And I am humble. And I humbly pray to the God of my understanding right now to give me the words to speak in an open, honest, and clear manner. And hopefully my story will come across to somebody and give encouragement and touch the heart. If it's just one individual out there, then that is my hope. My name is Jennifer, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. And it's 43 days today that I am sober and clean. And it's only through the grace of my God and the fellowship of AA. And again, it is a privilege to be here and be asked to speak. Where do I start? It's always from the beginning. And the beginning started for me July 1968 when I was born. And a beautiful child, innocent child of God was born. And I was born into a family, mother, brother, and a father. And my parents actually adopted me, so I am adopted. I later found that out down the road. When I was probably in third grade, I actually found that out. So my experience, I've learned over the years, a lot of my addictive behaviors came from the things that I was taught, or that I was shown, or things I might have observed or heard as I was growing up, whether it came from in the household, outside of the household, or maybe just on TV or in school. You know, my parents tried really hard to raise us the best that they could, and they did the best that they could. I think at times that it was a little bit overbearing, only because my mom was afraid of losing me, which comes later on along with the adoption part. So I grew up in a family that was non-alcoholic. There was no use of drugs or alcohol, except with the occasional social events. There might be maybe a cordial or two on the table, but there was never anything. My parents weren't of that nature, and they tried very hard to shelter my brother and I from that. From those things, from the outside world. I grew up, it was a loving home. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my father went out to work. And we had a ritual every day. My dad would come home at 5 o'clock, and we'd sit down and have dinner together. And it was the typical good old family, you know, upbringing there. But when I was in third grade, I learned from a friend coming home from a class trip about this adoption. and it came across in a very negative way. I didn't even know what the word adopted mean. I mean, third grade, that was like a college word to me, adoption, adopted, you know. That's not your mommy and you're adopted. So it was like, what does that mean? So later that evening, we were sitting down having dinner, and I asked at the kitchen table, what does the word adoption mean? And that's when a lot of things took a turn in my life from that moment on. My mom got very defensive. My dad just kept eating as if he never heard anything. My brother, I don't recall what his action or reaction was at the time. But, you know, as a child, you absorb, you know, these things. Even as an infant, I believe, you know, our children pick up on our tones of voices and our fears and our anxieties. And So anyway, I zoomed in on Mom, and Mom was very defensive, and, you know, that led a lot of questions in my mind, and she was very animate that, you know, what I heard was not true, and she was picking up the telephone to call every mother in the neighborhood, and to yell and scream at this one, and Mom was that way. Mom still is that way. Mom is the one that, she has her way of, she has a bad tongue, I'll just put it like that, and she can say things, I don't know if it's consciously or unconsciously that she does them at times. Sometimes it even confuses me to this day, if she's even aware of the effect of her words that she has on people. I went on from that point for many years wondering, like I was always looking in the mirror, wondering if I was, you know, I was or I wasn't, who did I belong to? Where did I fit in here? You know, my mom and dad, my dad was dark skin with dark salt and pepper hair, and my mom was a redhead with brown eyes. My dad had brown eyes. Here I am, a little blonde and blue eyed, and my brother's blonde and blue eyed. And then all of the excuses came along every time I confronted my mother, because I remember from third grade until I was a teenager, I would confront my mother every once in a while about where did I get these eyes and this hair, you know. In sixth grade, I'm learning about the reproductive system, and you know, little brown eyes and brown eyes don't make a blue-eyed baby. So, you know, I started to take on feelings at a young age I was being lied to. There was no honesty there, and I couldn't trust my mother. So lack of trust with my mother came at a very young age. I never confronted my dad about it. I always shied away from my dad on that topic. I don't know why, even to this day, but I never did question him about it. I always went to Mom and questioned Mom. Mm. But I learned that when I was 15 or 14, I rode away to upstate New York to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and actually I didn't write, I'm sorry, I made a phone call, and I tried to act like I was some legal person. I tried to act above my age, and I tried to take some advice from a friend of mine, to made that suggestion to me to make a phone call, and I found out that the records were sealed. Now, there was another terminology to a teenager that was like, you know, what did that mean? So I ran with this to my friend, who ran to her father, who was a lawyer, and they told me that, you know, the records are sealed. They explained what the terminology meant to me. So there was a little co-signment there for me, that there is a great possibility that there is truth, that I am adopted. So, I mean, I just wanted truth. You know, my mom and my dad gave me a Catholic education, clothes on my back, a roof over my head, lots of love. You know, I can't complain with the childhood that I had or the upbringing that I had, in spite of my mother's shortcomings and her character defects. She did the best that she could, because that's how she was taught, and did what she did with what she was given growing up. So I learned a lot of things from my mother, and I always said that I wasn't going to act like her or be like her, but even to today, I find myself acting like her and being like her. My teenage years were full of rebellion, and I was rebelling against my mother because of the lies and her attitude, her yelling, her screaming. You know, she was very quick to pick something up and throw it at you, or throw you out, or something. You know, I remember even happening between her and my father. She'd throw my dad out for over a stupid thing, like, you know, she would think that my father was siding with his sister over her. So I remember chasing the car down the street and telling dad to come back, don't leave, you know. So I rebelled a lot. There were curfews set, there were things handed down that I was told not to do, and I did. I didn't listen very well to the things that my parents were telling me, which led up to me having a child at 15. You know, I was having feelings of not being loved, and I was having feelings of being unwanted, because I was wondering who my real mother was and why would she do this to me. So I found comfort in friends. I found comfort in a man's arms at the age of 15, thinking that, you know, this was love, you know. So needless to say, I had a son at 15, and for my 16th birthday, he was 2 months old in my arms, and I went through a lot having him. I didn't know I was pregnant until I was 7 months pregnant. I knew something was happening to me, but I just didn't know what it was. I was a baby with a baby. I told my parents that I'm taking on this responsibility, and my mother told me this child is not coming home with you. I was devastated that there was such rejection. I wasn't living up to their expectations. I wasn't the perfect daughter that they wanted me to be, where I was going to go down the aisle in a white dress and daddy give me away. Now that I wasn't pure and clean any longer, I was nothing. And that's what my mother and the rest of the family made me be, or told me that I was. And I believed it, and I went on. My son did not come home to my house the first few months of his life. He actually went home to his father's parents' house, and I spent every day, 18 hours a day, maybe 20 hours a day, at their home with my son, and my mom and parents would get upset that I was spending too much time there. So there was a lot of conflict. Needless to say, I'll make a long story short, my son eventually came home, and, you know, my son's father and I, we stayed together for a short period, and he introduced me to marijuana. He introduced me to alcohol because his family was alcoholic. I started having my first drinks with him, but I did have a taste of it in the past on my own as a child. I remember sneaking into the cabinet and taking a sip of some awful whiskey or something that was just so nasty that I spit it out and spit it down the sink. But they were beer drinkers, and I liked beer. I found a new friend in beer. So I found myself spending quite a bit of time over at their house, even after my son came home to be with me. I found going over there comforting. My dad died when I was 18. I was at work. My mom went to work, and it just happened so suddenly. My dad was my best friend. And every night of my dad's awake, for those 3 nights, I drank a whole bottle of vodka every night. I couldn't accept it. It was so sudden and unpleasant. He was sick, but it just came so suddenly. And that took me to some ends that I still to this day, when I think back, I don't even know how I'm alive today. That really took me out. Mom broke up home after Dad died, and Mom and I were at some bitter. We were literally at each other's throats. We couldn't stand each other. I hated her in every letter of the word hatred. I hated my mother. She broke up home. She threw all those things away. Everything. None. They didn't offer me a thing. They didn't. Nothing. Nothing. She listened to people in the family, and everybody looked down upon me. I was useless, hopeless, worthless, and all of these things. And I started to take on just what they were saying and believing exactly that. I was useless, hopeless, worthless. I was nobody. I was nothing. And I ran. I spent time either at my son's father's parents' house or with a friend or the newfound man that I might have came across, whoever would take me in at that time. Anything not to spend time around or in my mother's home or in her new apartment now. I did everything possible to stay away from that atmosphere. But it all led me back. It led me into deeper drinking. It led me into deeper drug use. I've got so deep into it. My mom threw me out one night and took my son away. She said for me to go and take my son with me, because I eventually did go back to my mom's house, and we got into an argument, and she said, "Well, both of you just get out of here." And then she snatched him back and told me to go, and I never looked back. I hit the street, and I was picked up and put into a life that I don't care to really recall, but it's a part of my life, and I can openly talk about it today through the grace of God. It took me to prison once. This addiction and alcohol use took me to prison once. It took me to jail twice, including this most recent DUI, even if it was an overnight stay. It got me there. I've been in two rehabs, each for 6 months, one in 1991 and one in 2006. And I've had my rises and falls, over the years, with alcohol and drugs. From 1991 is when I was introduced to, NA and AA and, 12-step programs, and I've had some really great counselors over the years. Back then, I can remember when I was in my early 20s and just leaving prison. I was actually serving time. I did 2.5 years. And I didn't want to go home. I wanted to get out, but I didn't want to go back home. I didn't want to go back to be around. Even though I had contact with my mom, I just was remembering shortly before I was released that what happened before I got here, you know, and just knowing that I just didn't want to go back to that environment again. Little did I find out later on that changing places doesn't really mean a thing, because we take us wherever we go. So I made a decision, and I made a bargain, and I actually extended my stay by signing a contract with parole and going into the 6 month rehab that I speak of in 1991. I could have been out a whole lot sooner, but I made that decision to do that because I wanted to change my life around and make a better life for my son. Because while I was away, if I could have bent the bars and broke out and saved and rescued my son, I would have. And I would have caught a new charge, but I wouldn't have cared. I didn't care at that time, and I prayed for that every night in my jail cell. God, I just want to get out of here. I was trying to actually find a way to escape, to get to my son, to get him out of the hell that he was living in. Because both grandparents were at each other's throats. They were saying things, and I can hear the that my son is around listening to all these things, and I just didn't want this for him. But I was powerless. I couldn't do anything. I had to let it be, and so it was. Of course, my alcohol and drug use and Everything that I have done has affected not just me, but everyone else. My family, friends, mother, brother, son, everyone. And they still suffer from it today. Not everything is 100%, just because I have 43 days or 47 days. It all takes time. I had many unhealthy relationships. Many of unhealthy relationships. Nothing was healthy. I mean, I came across people in my life that were healthy, that planted seeds in me that I'll never forget. But it's what I chose to do with those seeds. Did I water it and did I let it grow? Or did I just let it sit there and die? And that's what I've been taking a look at a lot lately. I'm looking back, trying to find out where am I falling short here and where am I going wrong. A lot of it came to complacency, which is first and foremost. I became very complacent with my program over the years. I strongly believe that, you know, we need to stay plugged in. This is our lifeline. And I'll repeat that again. This is a lifeline. Whether it's face-to-face, online, it doesn't matter. This program is, for me, it's my lifeline today. And God just showed that to me when God smacked me that night when I caught that DUI. He gave me another chance at this. So my experience, as we all know, drinking, drugging doesn't take us anywhere good. There is no success in drugs and alcohol. Although I have tried to recently, over these past, I'd say, year or so, this past year or so, I was saying to myself, I can be like the normal drinker. Only to find out that this is not true. There is no success in any of this. Today, my strength not only comes from God and this program. I have to remain grateful. I find strength in being and having gratitude and showing my gratitude, even if it's for the bad events that happen in my life today. Even if it's for things that are occurring that I'm not happy with and that aren't going my way, I have to be grateful for those things. I can get upset at the littlest thing. My car doesn't start. I can't get the wrapper open quick enough. Or, these little things that can frustrate me and try to tick me off. I have to stop and take like a breath and just say it's okay. It's not that serious. And those little things aren't that serious. And even if it's a big thing, it's not that serious. I try to help things along the best I can, whether it's for myself or for someone else. And then there has to be a point where I have to say I have to let go now, and let God do the rest. He's the pilot and I'm the passenger, and I have to let him show me the way. I'm on his plane. He's not on mine. Because God knows my plane went down how many times when I got behind the wheel. I crashed and burned. I am so grateful. To be alive today, to have had all of these experiences in my life, it has taught me so much, and there is still so much for me to learn from a lot of things. I try to be diligent today. I try to be very careful of my attitudes and my behavior on a daily basis. I think that's first and foremost. I wake up every day and I thank God for another day. I ask him to give me the strength, the wisdom, and the guidance to get through the day. And at night, I thank him for getting me through the day and giving me the courage and the strength and the wisdom to deal with whatever it was that I needed to deal with. And it goes, of course, deeper than that, but that's just a short version that I'm telling you. I admit powerlessness every day, whether it's over people, situations. I have to admit, I have to turn that over, whatever it may be. I am powerless. I still struggle from time to time. Don't get me wrong, I am not perfect, and I am not a perfect person in a perfect world. I am far from it. I remain teachable every day. I am open to suggestions. I am open to anything. I'm open. I am willing to learn new things and to incorporate new things in my life. I don't shut the door on that, not ever. You know, just the other day, yesterday as a matter of fact, I had a gentleman come here to make sure my car don't move for 10 more days from the court. And right before he came, I was outside doing something, and there was one of my neighbors came across the street. I didn't know, actually, it was the neighbor, because we never spoke before. I just kind of briefly saw him from the window from time to time. And, you know, he came up to me, and he was asking me a question about his bicycle. And it was a few days prior, I was riding my bike, and I was maybe a mile from the house, or a mile or so from the house, and this gentleman came up to me and asked me where the park was. And I said, well, it's at the light and to the left. So yesterday, when my neighbor came up to me, I said to myself, oh my gosh, that was the same man that asked me where the park was. He was wearing the same clothes, he was barefoot, and I just happened to notice that a few days prior, that was the same gentleman that asked me where the park was. And as I was speaking to him, I can tell that there's a problem. You know, I know his family went back home. They come down to here, Florida, for certain months and go back home. They go back north. And I know he's all alone now. And I said to myself, wow, you know, he shouldn't be alone. Just from talking to him, he shouldn't be alone. But my point to the story, my point to sharing that with you is that, you know, just taking the time to listen to someone, you just never know, you know, how you might help that person or how they might help you. I could have got all caught up and wrapped up and, oh, this guy is coming and this and that and, oh, I got this to do and that to do and, oh, my God, another. But I stopped and I took the time to listen and maybe try to give him a little advice or suggestion or whatever it may be, or answer his question that he came up to me to ask me instead of brushing him off. And then later I went, took care of whatever I had to take care of and went on the computer and looked up some stuff and went across the street and gave it to him. And now I know my neighbor. God is good. Now I know one more of my neighbors. You know. Anyway, you know, I today, thank God, through this program, things I've learned in the past that I'm applying now in my life, my wonderful God, each and every one of you, I'm learning that, I am not useless, hopeless, worthless. I am somebody. And I matter. I find a lot of comfort in reading the Bible. Something that I would open from time to time over the years and kind of just take a gander every once in a while, you know, maybe read this verse or that verse or, you know, I love the Psalms and Proverbs. I find a lot of comfort in that. But I was flipping through it the other night and something told me, no, start from the beginning. Stop just opening and just, you know, just start from the beginning and read it from cover to cover, and that's my goal. That's what I'm doing today. I'm going to read it from cover to cover, just like the big book, from cover to cover, and I'll read it over and over and over again. I'm still working through a lot of things. I did get myself a sponsor, which I fell short on her a few times already. I overslept myself and I overnapped and missed my get-togethers, but I will be more vigilant over that. I will keep coming and I will get better. I'm working through, I have a lot of resentments and fear and self-righteousness. I have so many things. I'm not perfect. I'm just broken. And you know, it's funny, I was listening to a minister today online, and they were talking about, you know, God breaking us and giving us that brokenness so we can learn from it, you know. And that's exactly where I'm at today. I've learned to respect myself and love myself today. Respect my body. I don't need to be throwing myself around like a rag doll, so to speak. I don't need to be going out of my way to make people like me, you know. I don't have to, put myself down anymore. I love me today. I love where I'm at. I love what God is doing in my life. I love this fellowship. And there is so much more for me to learn, and I am so looking forward to the journey with you guys. I can't even begin to tell you the excitement that I have. It's a beautiful one. This is just, I am right where I am supposed to be right now, in my life. You know, this didn't happen by accident. I strongly believe that. I am right where I am supposed to be. And my hope is for others as well as myself, is to gain freedom from alcohol, drugs, and any other addiction that anyone may be suffering from. But I learned that in order for us to gain that freedom from those things, we need to also gain freedom from self. And that's what I am doing today, is trying to gain freedom from self. I am shedding my layers, I'm shedding the old skin, I'm getting down, deep down inside, and I don't like it, and it's painful, and it's, you know, it's not a bowl of cherries, and it's, you know, there's a lot of feelings that we feel more so sober, of course, because we're not medicating anything away anymore. But it makes us so much stronger, and it builds so much more character inside of us. And I know it's a lot of good is going to come out of this for each and every one of us. My other hope is a better quality of life for others as well as myself, by regaining and rebuilding, by rebuilding relationships in our life, by regaining trust in family, friends, by becoming responsible members of society, and just to give selflessly of ourselves to others when they're in need, in their time in need. That's my hope just for today. That is my hope for this this journey that I'm on. I signed up for an online school not that long ago, and it didn't really work out too well. My first day of classes, my computer crashed. And I says, oh, that's it, I surrender, I give up. You know, I was quick to give up, and I said, I just forget it. I'm more traditional anyway. I believe in a classroom setting. I learn better being around people. I love this online fellowship. This is home to me right here. But I know I have to get out and start making meetings. I made one so far, but I need to start designating time to make outside meetings, because as I believe Doyle was sharing the other day, if it was even last night, I'm losing my days, you know, there's nothing like getting that hug. You know, there's a difference between an online hug and a hug, you know, or, you know, just that eye-to-eye contact and, you know, just being in that atmosphere, you know. It helps us get through a lot of our, well, for me, it'll help me get through a lot of my defects of character, you know, with my judgmental state of mind or what have you. So I do need that in my life, and I have to start being more vigilant and delegating time for myself, make sure that I get to face-to-face meetings. But again, I was recently starting some online classes that didn't work out too well, and when I went down to the school, they gave me a booklet, and inside that booklet, there was a quote, a saying. I don't know where it came from, actually, the quote, or who said it, but I took it out, and I folded it up, and I put it right on my bedroom mirror. And it says, though no one could go back and make a brand new start, anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending. No one could go back and make a brand new start, but anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending. And it sounds so beautiful. If there's a newcomer in the room tonight, please keep coming back. Get a sponsor, make a commitment, read the big book. Get with somebody. You're in the right place. Please don't leave until the miracle happens. I'm going to stay grateful. I'm going to stay in this process. My name is Jennifer, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And thank you so much for letting me share.